Everybody, happy new year. Welcome to the Hologram Radio Show on January 1st, 2012. How exciting is that?
Awesome.
Awesome. I'm Cheryl Catherine Smith.
I'm Ash Riot.
And we are Hologram. And this is the Hologram Radio Show. And this is the new year. And we're just talking with Dawn about how exciting 2012 is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ash is just nodding her head, and stroking her chin.
I forgot that people can't hear my head nods. Anyway, Happy New Year.
They can't hear your head nods.
I know. I'm just, never mind. It's not on video either.
No, it's not. Actually, we're going to be doing a vlog later on today. That was the plan.
Yeah.
We apologize to those of you who were expecting us to kind of follow through with our weekly vlogs. They went from weekly to bi-weekly to monthly, and now it's been, I don't know, we're trying to do it every 2 weeks, but it's just been crazy, crazy busy. I mean, I'm sure everybody can relate, and I know we can make time for it, and that's what we plan on doing. So we're going to be doing a vlog, and you can check out our vlogs on our website. You can... They're on MySpace, are they not, Ash?
No. I think there might be a couple on MySpace, but because it's we have a link right to our YouTube, there's no sense in really having them up on MySpace when it's a lot less viewed than YouTube as far as videos go. Of course, music is obviously more common to listen to on MySpace, but the videos take a long time to upload, actually, whereas YouTube, it's less than a quarter of the time. And there's a lot more traffic on YouTube, so... every single one of our vlogs is on YouTube. I think we have a few on our MySpace.
And then do we have them also on our regular website, holo-gram.com?
Only our latest one, but our link to all the others is there too.
There you go. So you got three places you can check us out on YouTube. It's Hologram, HOLLOW-GRAM. And we're under Hologram Music, are we not?
On
YouTube?
On YouTube, yeah, Hologram Music, and then we are as well on MySpace.
Yeah, and then on our regular website, it's just
hologram.com, which will be updated soon. We've had a few issues with the uploading.
With the server, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're having some issues with our, what do they call them when they look after you?
Hosting.
Our hosting. There you go.
So.
Yeah, hosting. I should know that one.
So eventually our website will be updated. It's already done. We just have to get it, like,
uploaded. Yeah, we're having difficulty with the hoster, but that being said, we will continue working on it while we continue working and on our lives and living our lives. And that brings us to our topic. Our topic for this show is change, and we've entitled it Change, the Pain is in the Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
We really do want to talk about change because not only have we experienced a lot of change personally in our lives, but we also have seen a lot of change go on around us in other people's lives. There's been a lot of death in 2011 with friends and family. So that's definitely a change when someone loses a loved one in death, and there's been ending of relationships. And so there's been a lot of change, even for the band, and we talked a little bit about that when we did our two shows ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did Hologram Revisited, so we talked a little bit about what was going on for us personally. But we're just going to be a little more broad here. We're going to talk about change and what is change, and how do we need to kind of approach it if we want to stay relatively sane in all of it, and also accepting of it. And Ash and I were talking earlier, and Ash has a really cool story about I talk about moments in my life that were kind of either aha moments, or if you look back and recall in your memory, things that really stuck out and were really big, and maybe even at the time, they didn't seem big or they didn't feel big. But in hindsight, when you reflect back, you see the depth and scope of one particular occurrence or experience in your life. And this is what I think you can share a little bit now about change and how that was a part of your life as a young lady.
Well, sometimes I think that we have a certain idea of the way our life is going, and it sideswipes you completely in the opposite direction, and you have no choice but to kind of just go with the flow.
Or resist it.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
we have the choice to resist.
Well,
right?
I mean, even emotionally resist. You know, like, even if you're not so much resisting, like, whereas I had no choice but to physically, and I'll tell more about this in a minute, but I had no choice to physically resist. Like, I had to not resist. Like, I had to go full force into a change, but emotionally it was really hard. And that's what I'm speaking of is when I was younger, I was really, really into sports, and I wasn't really into music at all. I mean, I had, like, the first Green Day record, maybe the first Nirvana record or something, but, I mean, I was probably about 7? What was that, like, 80, 89 or 91? I don't know. No, because 89. Anyway, it was around 91, and then...
You were 7.
Yeah, I was 7, and I was just getting into just that kind of music, and then when I was 11, still wasn't really into music, but I was just into sports. Just sports. Everything. I was a quarterback on the football team. Everything. And then all of a sudden, because I was so active, I got in a... I guess I hurt myself really badly with my hips, and I didn't know how. And then I was just limping for months and months and months. And, like, sports was my life. I slept in a nightgown that had teddy bears and footballs on it. Okay? Come on.
So I guess sports and teddy bears were your life.
Yeah, more so the footballs. And I even had this autographed picture of Pavel Bure. I remember him.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't autographed. My dad did it.
Your dad faked Pavel?
Yeah, because Shelly, my friend Shelly, was such a non-nice person because she was like, oh, yeah, I met Pavel Bure. And I said, yeah, well, so did I.
You told a lie.
Yeah, but you know what? She was making me feel so bad about it. So she knew it was totally not the autograph at all. And I told her. But
so what? You showed her a picture of Pavel with a George autograph.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's funny. I didn't know that.
I was 10.
You were 10.
Yeah, between 10 and 11.
All right.
Anyway, that's how much I loved sports. Right. I had these little, like, fake football helmets, like these little plastic ones you could get in the quarter machines, and I spent like 50 cents on them all the time. Anyway, so we're totally getting off it, okay? Everyone's going to be laughing at me now.
That's so cute. You make necklaces out of your fake football helmet.
Yeah.
Aw. So cute.
Anyway, here we go.
Things I never knew about you. This is great.
She pretty much knows everything about me. Now, there's more.
There's more. That's so cute.
So, as I said, hurt myself. And I was just so upset because... I was in a wheelchair. I basically had to go to, like, all the doctors and the Canucks doctors and, like, everybody to see what my injury was because nobody knew. It was under my knee and it hurt really bad. So long story short, I had to have 2 hip surgeries and I almost died and I had to be in a wheelchair. So my whole life had to change because I couldn't even do physical education in school until I was 17 and I was already graduated. So I couldn't, my whole life, like from the time I was 12, so what was that, grade 6? Grade 6 until I was, you know, done school. Like, I couldn't do any of my sports in school anymore. And so during that time, that's when I really got into music. Like, that's when I really just started to live and breathe it. And if I, as tragic as it felt at the time, didn't have that surgery, if I didn't, you know, have that change of life, I wouldn't be here sitting with you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would not be in Hologram. I would not have even picked up a guitar. Like, who knows? Maybe I would have one day, but it wouldn't be like this. We wouldn't be where we are now. So even though I was in a wheelchair and it totally wrecked my life for a while.
But how did you deal with the depression around it? Letting go of being, you know, a football star, whatever it is that you had imagined that you would be eventually.
Well, it was rough on me while I was in the wheelchair. But... And even more, even like when I got out, it was pretty rough. But it was more, I kind of just put it to bed really quickly. Like, instead of really dwelling on it for a while, I kind of just found other things I was interested in. Like, I mean, I play video games because that's all I could really do. I played video games. I, you know, just did a lot of drawing and writing and music.
So, can I ask you this? Yeah. Ash's dad, George, is a drummer. And Ash's mom has always been a lover of music and been involved in the music scene, not as a musician, but sort of alongside people who are in music. And so you had a musical family. Mm-hmm. Your dad was going out to gigs on a regular basis.
Yeah.
They even owned a nightclub at one point where there was music happening, mm-hmm. and whatnot. So how did you not get into music prior to this happening with a musical family?
Well, I did in a way, but like, I mean, it was kind of just something fun to do because I was so busy. I kept myself so busy. Like, I rollerbladed all day. I took my rollerblades off only at night, and I had my rollerblades on all day. So, like, I was so active. So I'd be hanging out, and then all of a sudden I'd be like, oh, let's hit the drums, right? So I started playing drums when I was, like, just practicing them when I was about 8. And then everything kind of just came after that.
So you're a young girl. I mean, a lot of people talk about change in terms of their adult life, you know, the bigger stuff. But, you know, big changes happen for me as a young girl, too. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you can remember back then, and it is a big deal. It's not sort of dismissing such a huge change for a child and going, well, you're a child, you'll get over it.
Yeah.
It's recognizing even as children that we have profound things happen to us that affect the rest of our lives, that affect who we are as adults. So what I'm understanding is you're saying you just kind of dealt with it. But, I mean, there must have been a lot of grieving.
Oh, there was a lot of grieving, but it happened more so when I knew what was going to happen, the surgery. And then it happened, I was in a wheelchair for months and months, right? Because I was in a wheelchair, and then they found out that the other hip slipped. And then I had to go back in for another surgery and go in a wheelchair again. So it took a big chunk of my life, like, I think probably about 6 months of my life dealing with the surgeries. So during that time, before I could even, like, that was the hardest part. When I could finally walk again and stuff, I still would do a little, like, some things, right? Like, I could still go, like, I could still be a pitcher in baseball, which I was a pitcher for a while. So I could still be a pitcher.
Stand on the mound.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I wasn't completely gone from it, but it took the luster away a little bit because I couldn't be in it fully. So it kind of just dwindled away.
So change for you at that moment from being completely active to being stilled by mm-hmm. your body, mm-hmm. and by your health, changed your whole future.
My entire future.
So you then, when did you decide that music was your passion then?
When I discovered Green Day, and I love Green Day now, but not nearly a tiny, just, oh, they were the best in, like, I'd say anywhere before 95. So, right when Dookie came out, that was the last, you know, not good record in my opinion, because they're all good, but that was my last favorite.
Yeah, Dookie
and, yeah,
Green Day?
All the, and then that's, like, spiraled me into punk rock. So then I loved punk rock, and that's how I got into music. It's just, like, this whole spirit of, even though I couldn't really, you know, rebel by running around the bases and, you know, throwing a ball, I could listen to this music and go, oh, I get it.
Are you open-minded now? I mean, this is just coming to me. We didn't even rehearse this. Or there's,
okay.
Are you open-minded to sharing about how then you went into, you when you were a solo artist at the age of, what, 19? When did you cut your album? How old were you?
I did an EP when I was 16, 17. And then I did a full length when I was 21.
So your full-on album garnered a lot of interest, and it's called This Time I'll Forgive You Again by Ash Riot. And you were doing shows, a lot of shows down in the States, mm-hmm. and you got a lot of interest, and you were even deemed a riot girl in the movement, in the punk movement, which was quite something to have bestowed upon you, right?
Yeah.
It was a real acceptance. And so you got a lot of buzz around you. And then what change happened that you actually stopped? Do you want to share that?
I forget what it is. There's so many things.
Well, why? Because you were kind of heading somewhere, and then you just had enough.
Yeah, it was just too much. Like, I mean, even, like, some of the people in my band, it was just too much. it basically, like, I just, I mean, the biggest thing that made me have enough was that I found Hologram. You know what I mean? Because, like, I was still kind of doing some acoustic shows, even before I'd met you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as soon as, like, I mean, that's the biggest change. Like, you and I both had significant change as soon as we met each other musically.
Huge change.
Humongous.
In direction for both of us, right?
Well, I was in a band after the Ash Riot stuff. And, you know, that was fun, but it just wasn't, I wasn't completely fulfilled. And so that, I had to make a change there. And then that's pretty much exactly when I met you, as soon as I quit that punk band.
That was May of 2010, right?
Yeah.
2010, we met May of 2010.
And you were still working on your solo stuff.
I was working on my second album with Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin and I worked together on the first album, which was a show, Catherine Smith's self-titled album, and he was very much involved in the production and writing and playing of that album, and we continued on, and we were working on our second album. And then Ash and I met and just really felt guided to work together after, though, not initially, because Kevin and recognized Ash's enormous talent, as did I, but Kevin as a producer and as an engineer with our studio wanted to help Ash and basically just said, hey, why don't you, you're working on material now, let's get it down, because it's just, your talent is just far too great not to be heard. It's true.
Thank you.
And that's how it started. Then you were coming into our studio, and we were just basically, the whole point was only ever about doing your Ash Riot, getting all your new material down, your solo stuff for your next album, getting it ready for your next album.
Yeah. And then it just, like, because, I mean, I had intentions of still doing the Ash Riot stuff. You had intention of doing your solo stuff.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it just came to a head, and we went, oh, shit. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
We're supposed to be working together. And it wasn't to say that we put down our individual projects. It's more a postponement.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, life is about change. But in that moment, because life is also about opportunity, and it's about listening to intuitive guidance. It's about listening and seeing what opportunities are directly in front of you.
And, you know, we
and
look,
saying yes.
Yeah. And we look back, and, I mean, there's certain things that would prevent you from working with your old one and your solo stuff.
Yeah.
There's certain things that, like, you know,
things
I can't just
changed.
Go back. Exactly.
Yeah, things have changed for us in that department, but it's not to say that it's really just about focusing on what life presents to us.
And that's what we're doing now.
And that's what change is, because change is inevitable. I always quote John Lennon, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. I love that quote because it's so true in my own life. And what I feel that I've adopted is having a plan, but being open-minded and willing to change it if something presents itself. And it's not about being, I think you have to be careful there too, because I know of some people who they're a little bit too changey. You know, that they're not really committed enough and they'll change too quickly. There's a saying in a 12-step program, you know, stick around until the miracle happens.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people step out of something because they, you know, they're afraid, or because some of us are afraid of success equally to failure, right? So sometimes we do some self-sabotage stuff. But, you know, you have to stick to it. But, you know, I love that, you know, God grant us the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the willingness to change the things I can, and the courage to know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key to change for all of us, is knowing when we stick it out and knowing when we're supposed to let it go.
Yeah, that's true.
And you and I are very much intuitive in terms of following our intuitive guidance, and our intuitive voices matter hugely to us. And we're very much, we live in a sixth century world, you and I. Not everybody does, but you and I do, and we can relate on that level.
Well, I mean, look at, like, think about it. Think, where would we be right now if we did not do this?
If we didn't say yes?
If we did not say yes.
To opportunity?
To opportunity.
Change.
You would be somewhere completely different with a completely different outcome. I would be somewhere who knows where. And we wouldn't be sitting here together right now.
Well, we certainly wouldn't be. Who knows? I mean,
weird.
I used to love those books where you could pick your own outcome. You could pick all the different outcomes just from one choice. Do you remember those?
I know, yeah.
Well, that's what I kind of think our life is, you know.
Remember the Goosebumps ones?
Yeah.
Those were good.
Sean used to read those.
I had like every Goosebumps. The best one was Cuckoo Clock of Doom. Go read it.
You and Sean can relate to that.
Okay.
I was researching, I love history. For those of you who know me, I love history. And I love how history teaches us things if we would only let it, because mm-hmm. history does repeat itself. And we think we're so unique in our time, and, we have such unique troubles and problems. And the fact is that they're reoccurring. And we can often get out of a lot of things if we listen to the wisdom of the ages. And I found a quote about change by Heraclitus of Ephesus. He was a Greek philosopher, and he was around the time of Buddha, and I love Buddha too. And so he was 535 BC, and Buddha, I think, was 563 BC when he was born. But anyway, Heraclitus says, change is the only constant. Now, this is a man talking, 2,500 years ago about change. And most of us attempt to find security in that which we perceive we can control in our lives. So we can maybe find security in controlling a relationship, or living in the same home for a long period of time, or having the same job for a long period of time, or being in the same band environment for a long period of time. And it's not to say that those things aren't great, because there's a lot to be learned. If you spend a lifetime with one partner, for example, and it works for both of you, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But for some people, it's not what their life plan is about, or what really serves them both. A lot of relationship is about letting go, and moving forward and saying thank you and bless you for the relationship, but now it's time to have a new one or another experience. But I really do believe that if we can all, like the Buddha also said, everything changes, nothing remains without change. And I think a big thing around Buddhism is just allowing things to be. And live and let live, and let go, and surrender. And I know that the pain is in the resistance to change, because I've tried to resist change, and I've told life what it should be as opposed to what it was. And I lived in my own absolute insanity around trying to control my life situation, my life circumstance, believing that I could control it, attempting manipulation to control it. It's all crazy making stuff, because it really isn't about peace. It's only about turmoil. Mm-hmm. When I live in non-acceptance of change, I have no peace.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
And so I think it's really important for all of us. Also, like, this is why I was talking to you about grieving your change. It's not to sort of just take all the hits on the jaw and go, I'm fine.
No, you can't always just be tough. Like, I mean, it hurts so much. I went through so much upset, but I kind of grieved it before I had time to really miss it, because, like, I knew I couldn't just get up and go out. You know what I mean? It was almost easier to do it then than if I was, fine and just was told I couldn't do something,
So where are you now? So where are you at with change in your life right now, in your life?
Well,
I mean, 15 years has transpired since that 12-year-old, had those surgeries and decided, that music was the way to.
I think with change, I'm relatively open-minded. It's kind of hard sometimes, though, to accept changes that, that are less optional. You know what I mean? Sometimes, like a change that just happens and you're going, okay, well, I guess, like I'll use this example. Like, say I was waiting for, I had this complete, like, lineup all week of students, right? And, I mean, it's a positive and a negative change. Like, that's how you can view everything. It's like, say my whole Thursday people canceled. It's like, oh, this is actually really nice. I can have a day off. Well, there's $300 gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, oh, look, a phone's ringing. So, anyway, it's kind of like that. I mean, that's how I am with change. I can see the positive and negative of everything, but I'd say with change now, I'm more open-minded and positive about it than I've ever been. Like, I look at it and go, okay, you know what? If I didn't allow change, I kind of would be a boring person.
I was just thinking, I don't know if you ever saw the movie with Tom Hanks called Forrest Gump. Mm-hmm. Do you ever see that movie? Yeah. That movie comes up for me a lot of times in my life because I marveled at the character of Forrest Gump and the simplicity of him. To me, he was the Tao. Mm-hmm. He sort of represented the Tao because he just walked into miracles and lived them without resisting. Mm-hmm. And that's what I learned from that movie. I think a lot of us, we fall in love with our intellect.
Yeah.
And we like to make things more complicated. And so in doing so, we actually, I think, create more of a complicated world for ourselves because our intellect gets in the way oftentimes. It talks us out of things. It can talk us out of opportunity. It can talk us into depression. It can talk us into the what ifs, the whys, the why nots. So we can become whiners because something isn't a certain way. But I had the gift of a woman in my life once, and she said that there was only three answers to prayer. And one was yes. The second one was I've got something better, or not yet was the third one. The second one was I've not yet, and the third one was I got something better. So to me, that I can adapt that to change. I can say, all right, this isn't going the way I thought it would, or this isn't what I planned for my life, but hey, I've got to have that faith and trust in my own life path that there's something better, or I'm not ready for something at this point. Even if I might think I'm ready for something, I only have one piece of the puzzle. I can't see the whole picture, right? Mm-hmm. Once I pass away, maybe I can look back and go, hey, I see the whole picture now. I understand. And I even do that now, even before passing away. I can see how each puzzle piece fits. Mm-hmm. I was looking over something I wrote 6-7 years ago today with Ash. I read it aloud to her because it's very pertinent.
Oh, wow.
It's very pertinent to something that's happening right now in my life. And at the time, I had no concept. I wrote what was going on, and I had no concept of how it fit in to the future of me. And today, looking back and reading it, I get goosebumps. It's almost freaky.
Mm-hmm. I know.
How much it ties in to now. And this to me is living authentically when we can actually just kind of go with the flow instead of resisting the river, resisting the current, just kind of letting the current of life flow us, take us down. What are you pointing at?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we did some notes. Sash is pointing at the screen, and we had done some notes.
Yeah.
Which were you talking about? The ones at the top or the bottom?
The one about the river, the bottom one. You were talking about
the river?
The river and the vast water mass.
Sometimes when I write, I use really big words, but you'd never know it when you talk to me. But the writing, it's different. All of a sudden, my the way I write is quite, it's the way I actually think.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
I know.
Well, Charles Baudelaire, another really great thinker, poet, he a French poet, he said, any man who does not accept the conditions of life sells his soul. That's a great quote because you think about that. If any one of us thought about actually selling our soul, I think most of us, first of all, think of the devil, right? Thinking, oh, selling your soul, losing a sense of yourself. But selling our soul is not something that any of us, I think, would really want to do ever.
Mm-mm.
Like it completely goes against what we would do.
Exactly.
So what Baudelaire is saying is if we don't accept the conditions, which is automatically the change of life, the fact that change is inevitable, it's constant, as Heraclitus said, how do we sell our soul? Well, we sell our soul because we lose the experience of it.
You're not being authentic either.
Well, we're not really living.
Mm-hmm.
If we're resisting everything that happens to us, we're not actually enjoying it or living in our moments or having the experience of everything that we...
And you know what, too? Being open to signs.
Yeah.
Like, even when you're going through change and you're like, oh, crap, is this the right way? I don't know. Being open-minded enough to take your stubborn self out of the picture and really pay attention to spirit or pay attention to guidance. just intuitive guidance. That I think is something really cool to put your trust in, because, I mean, it's either everyone's saying to put your trust in God, but, I mean, there's so much more to put your trust in as well.
Well, it also helps you to understand that you're just one of many. You know, we are unique, we are special, but we're also part of something huge and big.
And if you people out there would like to call in and talk about change, I'd like to open the phone lines and say, hey, please call in, because we know you're listening, and that would be really awesome, because, I mean, change affects everybody, and it's nice to...
Well, it's nice to hear other people's perspective and how they deal with their own changes in their life.
Call and you'll get a hug.
I love your cyber hugs.
I know.
They're very warm and cuddly hugs.
Thanks.
Cyberly sent. I also wanted to do a Jim Morrison quote, and this is Jim Morrison, who is known as a poet and the lead singer and frontman of The Doors band, and a shaman, actually, a very gifted man. And he said, change is the relevance of true soul expression and experience. Without change, what are we but numberless pages in our novel of days? And I love how that coincides with the Baudelaire quote, and I know he loved Baudelaire. So a lot of it makes sense to me that it comes together. Why would we want to have numberless pages? I mean, everything that we do, every moment that we breathe air, every moment that we set our feet on this earth, we breathe in a new day, we open our eyes to it, we close our eyes when it's over, and slumber. Every moment is precious, and every moment, I just think life is one big adventure, and we need just kind of live in it and experience it. What are you doing?
Something in your hair.
Do I have a bug in my hair?
I don't know. That's what I was trying to look. Stay there.
She's grabbing something in my hair, and
stay there.
As I'm talking, I'm going, what are you doing?
There you go.
What is it? It's a fuzz.
It's a fuzz.
It's not a spider.
But it's a hard fuzz.
No worries.
Okay, everybody. Check your friend's hair.
That's right. Check your own. See if you have any bugs in it.
It's all about change.
I think it's really important if we want to really be happy with ourselves and forget about being happy with everything in our lives. First, we have to have self. We have to be happy with self. We have to exercise also our right to change our minds, because change is often thought of as the execution of mundane happiness or settlement. However, it's the only sure thing to turn a plain gray chalkboard into a scenic view of who we are. So every time we smile, for example, or every time we frown, or every time we wake up, that's change in and of itself. And yet, why is it so hard for us to accept change? Because change is just happening in the fact that you even move your body or you change your clothes. I mean, if we just take it in really small, we look at it in very simplistic ways, we can sort of accept it in bigger ways, I think. Mm-hmm. And if we do resist change, and say we liken it to a slew of trees that holds water back from a river of all this water that could be coming to us, would we choose to slowly suffocate our resources and die of thirst, or would we remove the trees in order for the water to replenish us? So you have to ask yourself that too, because when you stand in front of change and you resist it, this is what we're talking about with the pain of, with the resistance, you know, pain is in the resistance of it. Ask yourself, what's easier for you to do? Is it easier to take action or to be passive? Sometimes being passive is actually going to cause us some harm, too, if we're completely passive.
Well, exactly, because, I mean, if you're completely passive and you're just like, oh, I'll deal with it later, then you're going to have a much bigger mess to clean up when all the water destroys the trees and it's spilling over into a flood when you could just have it flow.
Yeah, sometimes you got to take the action first, and it may seem daunting.
Yeah.
But it's a lot less daunting than if you leave it.
Yeah.
And it becomes a bigger problem. I also was writing this. I wrote this earlier. This is me. Change comes from within. Others can expose us to philosophy that they themselves are attracted to, yet not adhering to in their own lives. And perhaps we personally adopt it or integrate it into our own lives, and then we leave them somewhat bewildered. I've had this happen actually quite a few times in my life. Now, this is an instance where the student does indeed supersede the master. I've had a lot of people who have sort of taken certain philosophies or adopted certain ideas, even like self-help. There's been a lot of self-help books, a lot of self-help philosophies, self-help, tons of stuff. You know, back in the day, it started in the 70s. I think Dyer started it with your erroneous zones, and he's got there's a bunch of self-help stuff that came out, and then even more so, and now it's more kind of got a spiritual kind of band. You know, you've got Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, and all the Louise Hay people, and it's really focusing on self-help, helping us adapt to change. A lot of books are written about that. So a lot of people can have, and I have people like this in my own life, where they kind of wear them like shiny clothes, mm-hmm. but they're not letting the clothes become part of them. They're not absorbing it.
Yeah.
I've been exposed to things when someone will say, hey, have you heard about this teacher? Or, hey, have you heard about this philosophy? And I'll go, no, or this book. I'll go, no, I haven't. They said, yeah, it's really made an impact on my life. And it's not to say that it hasn't, but then I read the book and it's almost like, oh my God, like it becomes part of me. It actually becomes a part
instead of just kind of taking it or leaving it, like
it's not about collecting things. It's not about experiencing about a little bit of everything. It's also about discarding the things that don't work for you either. But it really is about absorbing them and integrating them. And I had Kevin actually was telling me the other day, he said that scientists have proven, or psychologists, I don't know who, maybe he can call if he's listening, that we don't change, that our personalities or the way that we're formed as people, there's very little room for actual change in terms of, I guess, our DNA or the way that we're created in terms of our psychology and our brains and the way we are. I think he said it's something like 19% or a very low percentage that we actually do change. But I would kind of query that. I think that we have a sense of who we are, and we have certain traits. Like, for example, my I know that I can get intolerant, and I know that I can I can get short-tempered at times if I feel that I'm not being treated well, or if I feel that someone, I don't even know, I'm just using an example of a defect of character that I have, because I know that I have more than one, and I've never claimed to be perfect. One of them is just intolerance. I mean, for example, we were working last night, and we were actually being quite, I felt abused in terms of the way people were speaking to us, and that kind of stuff, I just can't. You know, it's really, really difficult for me just to sort of let it kind of flow off, you know, like water off a duck's back. I get my guard up and I just go, that's not acceptable. Anyway, but what I'm saying is that is a part of my personality. Mm-hmm. And I know it because I've had it, I can remember this being a part of me. But it's how I deal with it and how I express it. That's where the change happens. Am I going to be explosive and be abusive back? Or am I going to be, you know, labeling it how I see it, and then, you know, be kind but be firm? I mean, it's all about choice.
Well, it's hard because, I mean, like, I'll just use anything. I'll use a broad term, like not one person or a group of people. But, I mean, when you're being abused, it's really, really, really hard to not send the love back. Because even when somebody's mean to me, like, I'll send them love back and say, you know what, like, I really hope that, you know, you can lighten up for you. Because it's not really about me that you're lashing out. It's because you don't really like yourself, or you're, you know, it's, you keep kind of abusing me and you keep hating yourself more. And I don't want somebody to hate themselves, even if they're hurting on me. Like, I just want them or a group of people or whatever to kind of change their ways in order to, in order to just make things better. That's what I think.
Well, that's because you come from love, and that's the essence of who you are, too.
But sometimes it's hard.
I know. It's not to say that it's, I mean, when you're being abused or someone's being nasty to you or saying things that are untrue, and that's happened to both of us, it doesn't feel good.
And you just want to, I don't know, too close for comfort.
I always have faith that the truth does indeed always expose itself, no matter what, whether it's now or whether it's 10 years from now or whether it's 1,000 years from now. I do believe in the power of truth. Mm-hmm. We have Ryan on line 2. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how are you doing?
We're good. How are you doing?
How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. So, I like your subject tonight, change. It's,
thank you.
Something I'm really familiar with. obviously very familiar with.
That's great. You can share. You can share your ideas and feelings and
thoughts.
How
do you feel
it.
About change, Ryan?
I think it's constant. It needs to be constant in order for growth. And I think There's a quote that that I came across a while back, and it's by Anthony D'Angelo. I think I'm pronouncing his last name right, but it's, if you have time to want to complain about something, then you have time to do something about it. And that's really, like, I'm in recovery, as you guys know, and that really resounded with me, that it sat with me when I heard it, because it, you know, there is a choice when it comes to change. You can either, I mean, even when you're still sitting in the problem, I think things do change, but not for the better. But you can take your energies, like I realized I could take my energies and I can put them into being miserable, or I could take them and change my entire life. And I didn't realize, for me, how quickly that would happen. Even a year ago, I was still sitting in a bit of a, I mean, I'd been clean for almost 2 years by that point, but I was still sitting in this big pot of just anger and self-loathing. And I decided just somewhere along the way that I would just try and change one little thing. And it just, it's like a, almost like a snowball effect. It's, you know, you do one thing and then something else changes. And then you change something else and then something else changes. And it's all been for the better. And in a period of 1 year, I've made a lot of leaps and bounds. And I've also learned the necessity of balance in creating that change. You know, if I take on one project, there's one I need to let go of in order to maintain that balance and keep the change going. Otherwise, it's too easy to fall back, if that makes sense, and become overwhelmed. And for me, being overwhelmed is, for a long time, one of my problems. So I changed that. And that's kind of like my thoughts on change.
Brian, can I ask you...
Yep.
You're talking about being overwhelmed with change. What did you do to help yourself with the overwhelm? Because I think that's something that a lot of us go through. How do we deal when change is really big and we feel overwhelmed? What is it that you did to help you with that feeling of overwhelm?
Just a lot of focusing on self-care, the things I love to do, and looking at different things in my life that I could put on hold. Maybe looking at some of the things that weren't so positive that I could drop. Like in the last year, when things have gotten overwhelming, I've picked up my guitar more. I've gone to the studio more because that's been nurturing. And just finding even mindfulness when I'm walking down the street, you know, you get that escape. So it really boils down to self-care when things get overwhelming. Because overwhelmed isn't, like, change isn't always a bad thing, but it can be very big, and that overwhelming feeling isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's more of a growing kind of pain for me, and about learning to adjust. So I really focus on self-care when I feel overwhelmed with all the change. So
that sounds perfect, and that's beautiful, and I'm glad you shared that. I also want you, do you feel comfortable telling people who you are and leading them to your website and whatnot? Because you also are a very talented musician, and have your own video blogs. And did you want to share about that, and then our listeners can get to know you a little bit more?
Sure. I guess a songwriter in Vancouver. I have a website. It's ryanferber.com. It's F-U-R-B-E-R is the last name. And I'm on Facebook, too. People want to hear it. I think, well, we're connected on Facebook, too. So, let's just do some blogging, some writing. I'm a freelancer. That's all I can think of.
Thank you so much for that insight, too, because, I mean, that helps all of us. Like, I mean, we get overwhelmed with a lot of stuff in our lives, like everybody, and it helps to just hear it from somebody else, because sometimes, you know, we're all just so preoccupied with our own stuff, and it just, you know, to even hear about self-care, to go, that's helpful to me, to remind me, because I've been tired lately, I've been overwhelmed, and so now I will take a bath tomorrow.
That's right, it could be that simple.
Yeah.
Take a bath, put some candles in a bath and some fragrance, just be quiet for 10 minutes, put on some music that makes you feel calm. For me, nature's a big one. When I'm overwhelmed, I'm really big on going to the woods or being by the ocean. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, self-care is super, super important. And thank you so much, Ryan, for calling
in. Thank you so much, buddy.
And, yes, we want everybody to know who you are and to listen to your music. And we love you. We've spent time with you.
Pancakes soon.
That's right.
Yes, we must do that.
We will. Okay, well, you take care and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Okay, bye, Ryan.
Bye.
We do have Kevin from Vancouver on line 3. Kevin, are you going to tell me the percentage?
Yeah. I'll tell you the story about it because it's actually created a lot of discussion over the last few days.
Okay.
But it was a Douglas Copeland book called Girlfriend in a Coma, and I wonder if do either of you get the reference, that title?
The Smiths.
Yeah, The Smiths. There you go. He wrote a book called Girlfriend in a Coma. And he presents in the book, he says, I heard a study at one time that that personality can't change any more than 5%.
Five.
So there's no, but I can't research this at all. Like, I've actually tried to look it up. I don't know if he was just throwing that out just to, you know, for fun, or he really did hear a study. I haven't been able to verify it, but I put it up on Facebook, and there was, I think, 15 responses. So everybody's just been quite fascinated with it, but that's all I know is that that he presented this in a fiction novel, and I've seen no other. So I'm curious too if anybody hears anything about this, an actual study, and how you would quantify a personality changing by 5%. How you could possibly put a number on it. So I heard you say phone in if you can ask that. So that's all I know. That's all it was. It was a novel.
Because I remember talking to you and I didn't remember the percent and I said 19. So thank you for correcting me. And the one thing I wanted to say about that particular thing though, Kevin, is like what I was trying to express, albeit probably not very well. I have a certain personality stuff that are integrated and are part of me, but it's my choice of how I deal with things. So maybe my personality can't change in a huge way, but the way I deal with everything can certainly change in a huge way, right?
Yeah, that's what's been coming up. That's what I feel, too, and I've had a few close friends, the same thing. Well, actually, not so much, but I'm glad you said that because I've been saying the same thing. Your actions can change drastically, but your underlying personality might be quite similar still, but you might not express it. You might express it in a completely 180-degree different way, in a positive way, that same thing. So I think where people change a lot, and we got changing now.
Yeah, there you go.
Where people change a lot is in the way they express their personality. But perhaps I'm starting to realize I thought I'd changed a lot, and I think a lot of people think they have changed a lot. And really, to the outside thing, you know, they're the same person they've always been. It seems huge to them, but it might not be as big. But you're definitely, the actions that you do can change drastically, I think. So I don't think you can quantify it, and that's. But you made me think anyway. I was thinking about your whole subject and about how change feels to me, and I've never found it all that frightening. I think, I don't know if anyone said this, but I've almost thought that I've liked change so much at points in my life that it's been reckless and kind of dangerous because I've changed without sort of due caution or concern just to break things up, you know, just to have a change of pace or just to make it not boring. And I think I've been too into change at times in my life.
Yeah, well, we're talking about change being inevitable. It's not something that we always are the ones who instigate, right?
True, true.
Right? So you're talking about change that you yourself have instigated.
Yeah, like say, we do, like I guess change is, there's two kinds of change. There's change that you have no control over or limited control, and then there's, you know, being able to change of your own accord. I'm afraid of change that is beyond my control, that it'll be negative or considered negative or something I can't handle. So I've always been quite frightened of that. Maybe that's why the change that I can control I get more extreme with, because I feel like, you know, there's a sense of of being able to control. So it could be a reaction to change that I can't control and change that I can, you know. It's an interesting subject.
Well, change is certainly an interesting subject, and as you said, it's something that we all have in our lives, and we're always changing. Everything's changing. Our bodies are changing. Our, you know, even our the way we think changes. We can change a belief system, which I've done in my life too. So, thank you very much. I'm so glad you called and let me know about that, where it came from, because I didn't remember exactly where you got it from. So I appreciate that. And it'd be interesting if we get any emails with regards to the Copeland, you know, what he had said in his book or anything. That'd be cool. And if we do, we'll pass it along to you, okay?
That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin. Have a good night and Happy New Year. Bye. All right, we have one more caller. We've got some time here. We've got Janice from upstairs on line one. Hey, Janice.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you? How are you guys?
Oh, we're good. It's been a long time.
Oh. Yeah, did you get enough to eat?
Certainly did. That's the theme. That's the theme. Whenever Janice is a fabulous cook and she's always feeding us great meals, and we had a lovely New Year's Day assortment of wonderful appetizers, so thank you for that. They were beautiful.
Amen.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. About change, what I was going to talk about is, we're constantly evolving, constantly changing. Situations are changing, and I think it's a part of growing. And I think, well, my dad passed away on the 2nd of December, and that's brought a big change to me, because I didn't see him too often because he lived in Abbotsford, but I talked to him on the phone, and now that he's gone, the change isn't really there, because to me it seems like he's still living in another town. Like it's so hard to explain this type of change. Maybe it's the subconscious not wanting to change, being afraid of change, and I think that's what death is. It's changing, it's evolving, it's how do I explain this? How I feel? It's almost like you're afraid of it. You're afraid of any kind of change. Like you're afraid to. For some people, like you're afraid to change your furniture, you're afraid to move, you're afraid to move that picture onto that wall or paint a different color, and that's all about change, changing where you live, changing what you wear, changing your hairstyle, like everything is a change. And what it really is fear of the unknown, of what's going to happen when that change takes place.
Exactly.
So, to me, that's what it is. It's fear of the inevitable, fear of the unknown, that you don't really know what to expect when that change takes place. So you're afraid to take that first step, or you're afraid to accept something that has happened because you're afraid of change. We all are, I think. Because it's fear of the unknown. So that's my big philosophy anyway.
That's excellent.
So that, what do you think? Yeah.
That's perfect. Thank you,
yeah.
Janet.
So
thank you for your fabulous.
You're welcome. I just wanted to let you guys know what I thought anyway.
Well, thank
Sonia
you.
Sonia was too scared to call.
Sonia. Auntie Sonia is also
what
the
am I going to say? Write it down.
We're all Auntie Sonia is actually guest starred in one of our vlogs.
That's right. So Auntie Sonia is too afraid to call, but she's definitely not afraid to be seen on camera
as a witch.
As a witch
with spiders and a crystal ball.
That was at our Halloween vlog. So if you want to see who Auntie Sonia is, you can see her in our Halloween vlog. Thank you so much, Janice. Thank you for that. And it's true, fear of the unknown. But if we don't face anything in terms of faith and trust, we do end up with just numberless pages in our novel of days, which I think would be ripping ourselves off. It's important for all of us to love ourselves through change, as Ryan was saying, to face the fact that maybe we are afraid of the unknown, but then to just surrender and let go of that and to have faith and trust that no matter what, we're going to be okay. Also, it's important to have a really good support network when you're going through change. Gather your friends and your family. Ask them for help, right?
Yes.
And that's what you've done, Janice. That's what you've done. And you have a beautiful family and a lot of love around you. And it makes the change all that easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm so, so lucky. Thank you, guys. You're a blessing in my life.
And you're a blessing in ours, so thank you, and we're going to say goodnight, and before we end our program, we want to ask Don if he would please play the fusion for us. We want to send our love and our blessings to all of you for a wonderful 2012, the highest of everything to and for you. Believe that we are all in this together, and it doesn't have to be a negative thing. It's an absolutely beautiful thing, and so we leave you with our song, The Fusion, and this is Cheryl Catherine Smith saying, I love you, good evening, kiss a tree, connect with nature, connect with your inner selves. And Ash
says, Happy New Year, make a mixtape for a friend.
There you go. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Universe encompasses me, beneath the stars above the sea. Enthralled on Earth, watching you, knowing I have a part in this too. Faithlessly watching, wait for dim eyes, severing my old earthly disguise. Enthralled on Earth, watching you, knowing we have a part in this too. World of illusion, so I honor all illusion. Be not baffled with exclusion. Bring all love in for the fusion. Watch the wind blow power out, stronger than what we were. Forgotten thieves press upon these autumn leaves. Angelic hosts be known to us, falling faster than we trust. Watch the circles born of light, speaking while we're all up all night. This is a world of illusion, so I honor all. In a world of illusion, it serves us, yet we must come back to love.
The love revolution
is within each and every one of us. A knowing, a higher understanding. We all embrace it. All we have to do is accept.